This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania.
Well, when you talk about the concerns around climate change, you have to discuss more than just the climate piece. There are many other potential impacts that may come from the world of business or in our culture as well. Our next guest looks to tackle those issues in the new book that he has authored. Ji-Sung Park is the author of the book Slow Burn, The Hidden Costs of a Warming World. That comes out next week. Ji-Sung is an assistant professor in the School of Social Policy and Practice here at the University of Pennsylvania. Ji-Sung, great to have you with us. Thanks for your time today.
Hi, Dan. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And so it sounds like, to a degree, in terms of this book and what you're trying to tackle here, is that maybe we don't have enough of a focus on these other areas being impacted by climate.
Yeah, I think that's right, Dan. You know, I think many of your listeners will be familiar with the idea that climate change is a serious issue. In fact, if you look at many of the polls, you know, they suggest that the vast majority of, you know, C-suite executives, for instance, think that climate change is a serious issue. The idea that the book tries to tackle is that if you look under the hood, many of the perhaps most economically significant effects of climate change may not be the kinds of effects that we typically associate with the issue. So if you ask most people, you know, what are the things you worry about most when it comes to climate change, chances are you're going to get a list of things like sea level rise, hurricanes, wildfires. These are all very important potential effects. But it actually turns out that if you add up the costs associated just with incrementally hotter temperature, from an economic standpoint, you know, the subtle effects of things like hotter temperature on labor productivity, on worker safety, on human capital broadly construed, and health, they seem to add up in ways that are perhaps more economically meaningful than first meets the eye. And so, you know, the sort of actionable piece of that is, one, trying to better understand, put some more numbers behind perhaps the urgency of tackling climate change from a mitigation standpoint. But also, you know, to a point, it's also trying to help us understand that, look, given the amount of warming that we've baked into the system, there are a lot of actions that we as individuals or leaders of an organization can and should take to protect ourselves from these effects. And again, the effects being those that are typically not as salient or in the news when you might think of climate change.
What was it that drew you to this side of the discussion, though?
Well, I'm going to try not to be too autobiographical. I mean, I was always interested in the issue of climate change. I'm an economist by training. Yeah. I think the focus on sort of these hidden costs, if you will, is somewhat opportunistic. It comes from the broader trends in both the availability of data sources, large administrative data sources, what some might call big data, as well as changes in, you know, the research community's ability to more accurately discern cause and effect from this kind of data without actually having to run experiments. And so the combination of those two trends, I think, allows us to identify some of these more subtle impacts with greater precision, and, you know, combine that with my longstanding interest in the issue. Here we are.
And when you're talking about, you know, economics, then you're talking about, you know, some of the areas where there you could mitigate some of the issues of cost without probably a whole lot of investment. If you don't do that, then you're talking about a significant impact that maybe is an area where you could avoid.
That's right. And I think, you know, we as a community are still uncovering the specific, let's call them adaptation or mitigation levers that are most effective in reducing these costs. But just to give you an example, right, just to sort of hammer home the point of salience, in some of our research, you know, we look at how
hotter temperature affects workplace injuries using, you know, many millions of workers' compensation claims in California. And the punchline, one of the punchlines, is that the vast majority of the increase in injuries that is associated with hotter temperatures, so if you go to work on a, say, 90-degree day, you're roughly 10 to 15% more likely to be hurt on the job. But many of those injuries are things that are not ostensibly unrelated. They're ostensibly unrelated to heat. They're not officially categorized as heat illnesses. They're more like someone falling off a ladder, getting hit by
right.
a moving vehicle. So to your point, I think just a greater awareness of the costs is probably a necessary condition to being able to do something about it.
When you talk about then some of these instances, where do the impacts probably lie in terms of, you know, our communities? I would assume that, you know, in many cases you're talking about blue collar, maybe even lower to middle income communities that potentially are the ones that are feeling these impacts.
Yeah, that's correct, Dan. So just to stick with the workplace example, and we could talk about many other examples of climate impacts. Just on that point, you know, the U.S. economy is one of the richest on the planet, and yet there are roughly 100 million workers in the U.S. labor force who don't have a bachelor's degree, the overwhelming majority of which report routine exposure to harsh environmental conditions, including but not limited to extreme heat on the job. And so these are the workers, some will call them frontline workers, who you would expect, given the data, to be bearing a larger brunt of the impacts. And, you know, as climate change progresses, you can expect these impacts to increase. But I do also want to stress, Dan, that, you know, those costs, to some extent, you would expect are also passed down the line, whether that's in terms of business profitability or the costs that we as taxpayers pay, right, to help make these workers whole, especially to the extent that many insurance systems, whether it's workers' compensation or we haven't talked about home insurance, but there are many ways in which the taxpayer also ultimately foots the bill associated with climate risk.
Right. So outside of kind of the business component that we've talked about, what are some of the other areas where you're seeing this potential impact pop up?
Wow, there's so many that I can name. I know we have limited time, but you know, both in my own research and in others, there's a great deal of evidence now that's consistent with the idea that, again, even incrementally hotter temperature can affect, you know, human health broadly, mental health. There's work that shows that labor productivity falls on hotter days, although the extent to which it does varies a lot, depending on the level of adaptation. There's studies now showing that, you know, hotter temperature increases local crime, violence in prisons, even how much profanity people use on social media appears to be a function of the temperature. So, again, all these subtle ways in which living in a hotter world may be exacting these typically, you know, not so salient costs. But in the research community, we call this a sort of a small beta large N problem, right? It's a small effect on average, but because it seems to be spread out across such a large population, if you want to think about aggregate impacts, they seem to add up.
What do you think then are some of the ways then to start to tackle these issues as part of the larger discussion around focusing on the climate?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the first order of business is just to make sure that we are following through on our pledges to reduce emissions, right, without solving the ultimate market failure, and that is climate change slowing down the pace of warming. You can expect that we could expect these costs to, increase moving forward. But I would also say that given the amount of inertia that is in the climate system, so even if we were to go to zero emissions today, there would be a certain amount of warming that would be baked in over the next few decades. So that being the case, I would say that being more active in terms of thinking about, okay, what are the physical climate risks that I or my company or my community may be exposed to, and what kinds of interventions can we make now to sort of reduce those effects? I think that's the way to go. I mean, just the last point here I'd stress is that, right, we think of climate change typically as an environmental issue. We're talking about, during Earth Week, but the way that a given physical climate phenomenon ultimately manifests in terms of human or economic costs is going to be a complex function of all the little decisions and institutions and rules and norms that we have in place socially in our local community. And so trying to think about where the intervention points are that can reduce the sensitivity of whatever outcome you're interested in, human health, productivity, what have you, to these physical climate impacts, I think that's something we should be thinking more about.
But as you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, really, one of the first hurdles then that you have to clear, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there are elements of this that really tie into our culture and tie into our day-to-day lives. And 100%. I think not many people think along that line.
I think you're right. I mean, on the one hand, I'm encouraged by the fact that I was looking at a Yale survey the other day, something like over 70% of Americans now believe that climate change is happening. But when you start asking them, well, do you think it's going to hurt you individually or your family, the number seems to drop and there's a lot more bifurcation. I think you're referring more also to this sort of cultural polarization around the issue. But I would argue that, again, the more data doesn't lie, and the more we can think about acting on climate change, not as like this binary black and white switch where it's, we succeed if we meet 1.5 degrees, no matter what it costs, and we fail, in which case, it's global calamity. The reality was always going to be that climate policy was a dial, not a switch, right? And so the more we can familiarize ourselves with just these aggregate hidden costs to society, I think the more we can begin to, maybe tone down the temperature in terms of how we talk about it and just talk about it more in terms of, the nitty-gritty of what we can do given these costs, as opposed to it being sometimes more of a symbolic discussion. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Jisung, I have to end it there, but thank you very much for giving us a few moments today, and we wish you all the best with the book.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show.
You got it. Jisung Park, who is an assistant professor here at the School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. The book is Slow Burn, The Hidden Costs of a Warming World. And as we mentioned, that comes out next week. To explore more content from the Wharton School, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.